Let's talk about our democracy for a minute. But let's do it in a way that makes the snowflakes' heads explode. Let me be clear before this podcast begins. We are loud,
loud,
proud,
proud,
and do not give a fuck. This is the Tony Michaels Podcast. Real and raw political and social commentary. The freedom to oppress the rights of other people is not liberty, you shit-eating moron. Ah, the smell of freedom of speech. This is the Tony Michaels Podcast, and this is Tony Michaels. Hey, Tony, fuck 'em.
Broadcasting live from the Antifa Corporate Headquarters here in Commie Falls, Missouri, it is Mayo Michaels. Oh, wait, Tony Michaels, sorry. A little bit of confusion on Twitter here lately. I still think it's hilarious. I'm going to lean into it. I don't give a shit. I'm flattered. I'm flattered that the MAGA Twitter trolls think that I'm Mayo, that I'm a strong, powerful woman that has a huge voice. That's, I mean, if you're going to transition, baby, that's what you should transition to, is a strong, powerful woman with a very loud voice that everyone can hear and everyone appreciates. Yes, they still think I'm Mayo, the account. Oh, what a bunch of fucking boneheads. And ain't no wonder they vote for people like Donald Trump. They can't even, they can't even figure out, you know, double check to make sure these two accounts are different. How in the fuck? Listen, you're probably listening on XGen right now. There's probably several trolls that are on XGen right now listening. I'm sure they are. They're like, hey, look, Mayo Michaels is going live. And I'm sure they're dumping the fucking the rainbow Mayo memes as we go. Bam, 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 bam. I'm sure they're listening. I appreciate that you all have resolve to try to pick on motherfuckers, but you really, I don't think you understand. I don't think you understand who you fucked with. I don't think you really get it. This is the fuck 'em guy. Like, even if I was male, what the fuck's that? You don't think I would just say it out loud? I can't wait till they find out my background. That's going to be fantastic. Oh, they're going to have really good fun with that this weekend. And they're going to gather up. They're going to gather me up thousands and thousands of new followers. They already have. I think I've gained 1,000 followers since this thing yesterday. They're going to gather up all kinds of followers for me. And honestly, why in the fuck would I have an alt account that's got 400,000 400,000 followers, and then my account's got a puny like 40,000 or whatever the hell it is, under 40,000. Oh, fucking boneheads. But these people are shit eaters. That's what we're dealing with. So, hey, guess what? We got some great guests here on the show today. I'm hoping I don't get the names wrong. In the producer's corner this morning, you guys know that we do a producer's corner every Monday and Friday on Discord if you're in the $20 tier or higher on Patreon. And there are changes coming to Patreon. The team is working on changes coming to Patreon. And we had a meeting about it. It's going to be, I'm really excited about some of the changes that are going to come to Patreon. You guys are going to get more personal access to Mayo Michaels. Excuse me, Tony Michaels. Jeez, I can't help but say the quiet part out loud or the white mayonnaise part out loud. But we were talking in the producer's corner this morning, and I had to ask, you know, I'm horrible at pronouncing names. Tom Schwaller and Paul Waldman, who wrote the book White Rule Rage, which we are doing in the book club right now on Discord. So if you want to have discussions about this with the Fuck'em Fam, the Library of Democracy sponsors the Fuck'em Fam book club over on Discord. You just join the Discord server and you can get in on the book club. It's free. It doesn't cost you a single thing to come have a conversation or listen to the conversation for that matter in the book club on Discord. It's really cool. I get really excited about the book club. I'm hoping I can join this evening so I can hear a little more conversation. I was there last week to listen to some conversation about this book by Tom and Paul. But I hope I don't call them Harry and Balls Because this morning in the producer's corner, you know, you're joking around, you know, having fun, you know, as we do. Us Island of Misfit Toys over there, we like to joke around and have fun. I mean, if you're not laughing as you're saving democracy, you're probably not doing it correctly. But I said, God, wouldn't it be bad if I called them Harry and Balls? Because I said, what's their names again? What's the, and I'm talking about their last names. I forgot. You know, you ever forget? I forget. What do you want to mean? I don't even know my real name. Apparently, I'm Mayo Michaels. So what do you want from me? All right, let's go to the news. Let's get some news involved. Yes, also, Schaller is what I've been told. Schaller? Is that how you say it? Schall, like y'aller. Hey, y'all in there? Schaller in there? So that's how I remember it. See, I do a word association. Y'all is a word, all right? You can go get fucked if you don't think y'all is a word. Maybe I'll ask Harry and Balls. I mean, Tom and Paul. all the people in the producer's corner are laughing right now. You're not, because you're like, what does that mean? Harry and Balls? What are you talking about? Well, get in on the producer's corner. You might be in on the inside jokes. But I might ask Tom and Paul if y'all is a word. Now, they have this book, and I did my homework a little bit. I went and watched a few interviews with these fellers that they've had. And I think this interview is going to be a little different interview than they've ever had before, because they're actually talking to someone who comes from white rule rage. That's a tricky thing. I like white Christian nationalism better. It just rolls off the tongue better. You know, white rule rage is like, how much wood would a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck could chuck wood, you know? Say that 10 times fast type shit. White rule rage. But I come from a place of white rule rage. I was raised on white rule rage. So I don't know that anyone has had the chance to interview them that actually comes from the background of which they wrote the book about. So most rule people don't identify themselves as rule. We identify ourselves as farmers, country. That's how we identify ourselves. That's why we don't say it. We're country, y'all. We're country. The people from the backwoods don't identify as R-U-R-A-L. They don't. That's one reason why they probably got a lot of shit for their book. Is because that's how intellectuals and academics identify the country. But people from that part of the country say country. We're country. We're from the country. That's what they say. It just is. That's just the fact of the matter. So maybe we'll talk about that today. And maybe you guys should get your questions ready. Maybe I'll check out the chat for some questions. I'm not sure exactly how long they'll stay. I got them slotted for 30 minutes. So we will see how long they're going to be in the chat with us. Let me check in here, see if I've got any kind of update here. But speaking of updates, it's cold in the courtroom. Grandpa Poopy Pants. Grandpa Poopy Pants is going to have to pack a Snuggie. And I don't know what, I don't know, maybe he's got his own Nazi brand of Snuggie. Maybe you guys can come up with a Snuggie. Yeah, that's right. He needs a pardon blanket. You're right. He needs a pardon blanket. He's really cold in it. It's freezing. It's so cold in there. What? And this morning I called it his struggle, because he's such a little whiny bitch. Listen to this. This motherfucker printed off news stories online. This motherfucker went on the internet and hit print on his web browser. That's probably the first fucking time print has been used on Google Chrome. Like, they don't, Google Chrome's like, do we even have a goddamn print option anymore? Can you print from the internet? Is this a fucking thing? Oh, his lawyers did. Why? No, but he had them in his hand. His lawyers wouldn't have printed them if he didn't fucking. Some people are mad because they apparently there's people in the chat that print stories off the internet too. I actually did not know. I did not know that Chrome had a print button anymore. I mean, it used to be right there. You know what I mean? On your web browser, it had the print button like a son of a bitch. That's when you had like MapQuest and shit. You remember MapQuest? I bet that motherfucker still uses MapQuest. He'll go on MapQuest and he'll print the fucking thing off, and he's, you know, he doesn't drive, but he's like, "No, you got to turn left here. I'm looking at my papers." He printed off fucking news articles, and this guy's standing there with a stack of news articles, as if this is proof, legal proof of why he should not be in this court proceeding. Look, stop breaking the law, asshole. It's like on the Liar Liar, which is appropriate for him as a reference, as a pop culture reference. Stop breaking the law, asshole. You guys remember that part of the movie? But that, I mean, what do you want? And really, honestly, I couldn't be happier for the guy. Because he has to sit in that cold-ass courtroom. And I think the fucking judge, now that he knows that Trump is freezing, should turn that motherfucking thermostat down. I mean, just turn that, just bury that bitch to the bottom. Like, if 45, just, I don't care about the air conditioning bill. Fuck, we can all pitch in. Let's start a GoFundMe to pay the air conditioning bill there at the Manhattan courthouse. Fuck him. Fuck him. Make that son of a bitch where he's got to wear... thermal underwear. You know what I mean? Do they make thermal diapers? I don't know if they make thermal diapers or not. I'm not really sure. Probably depends on where you get them. Maybe that's another good idea for a good ad. Is Trump thermal diapers? You know, I'm just trying to throw this out there. We got a great team, and you guys are so creative here. Someone typed in tree killer. You tree killer in the chat here. You know what? And that's a great meme. See, I want to train this fucking fam up here. That idea. Here's another good one. Paper boy. There's a good one. There's a good meme right there. You just take the image of him holding the papers in the court, whining like a little bitch, and you just put paper boy on it, and you just put it out there in the universe. See what happens. And the other one was tree killer. Where is that? Vixen says ice him. Yeah, ice him. You know, you take an image of him, put icicles on him, ice the dude. Get him on ice. Oh, see, there's another good meme, right? You guys meme the shit out of this stuff all day long in this chat. And don't be scared to steal. I'm not scared to steal. You shouldn't be scared to steal either. Just go for it. Go for it. You want to, and I know it sounds stupid, like we can meme our way out of this, but I'm telling you, man, it really gets into their sensitivity. It really does. Now, here it is. Tree killer. Tree killer. You fucking tree murderer. So, I mean, it's perfect. Just, again, you meme it, meme it, meme it, meme it, meme it. And it's all funny stuff, and it gets underneath their skin. It gets their sensitivity going. And it really shows who they are. This is kind of like this Mayo stuff. I know a lot of people aren't on Twitter, and they're like, "Tony, you're talking about Twitter stuff, and you really don't care about Twitter stuff." But hey, you should care about, you know, exactly what is happening and how to position yourself to really fuck with these people. Because honestly, for the MAGA trolls to be messing with me and calling me are the same that I'm behind the account Mayo, which I'm not. Breaking news. I'm not Mayo. Breaking news. Actually, I should probably say I am Mayo just to fuck with them. Breaking. I want to confirm right now on the Tony Michaels podcast that yes, I am Mayo. I do control the account. Mayo is spicy. All right, now they have the clip, so they can cut that out, and then they can post it on Twitter. You see how that works? You just fuck with them. You fuck with them. Because if we fuck with them and keep them busy, they're less likely to destroy our democracy. That's kind of what Trump's going through right now. That's why he's so fucking pissed off. He's so pissed off because he's sitting in an iced ass courtroom and he can't be out there destroying democracy. He's really mad about it, that he can't be out there destroying democracy. He really wants to be out there banging up our Constitution. And he can't do it when he's sitting in a courtroom and they won't let him play on his Twitter machine. Or his true social machine, I should say. That's how this works. Oh, look at this. We already got the... We already got Tony's spicy mayo memes. Anyway, you know, if you guys want to get on the meme game and you want to really create some fuckery, which is going to be the majority of this election, right? We really got to get in these people's grills. And I know a lot of times it feels like you're talking to bot accounts, but don't underestimate that there's actually stupid human beings behind some of these accounts. And I say that with some vigor here, because these people are not smart, right? They're not smart. They're just not. I mean, anyone who decides to wake up in the morning and take what Trump says seriously, you're either faking it, pretending, because you're an asshole, or you're not smart. Either way, you're stupid. So these are stupid people doing stupid things. And they're losing. They're losing badly. I mean, if you noticed, MAGA Mike Johnson has actually become the Speaker of the House now because Donald Trump is tied up in court. Donald Trump can't attack Mike Johnson very well. And the reason why is because Donald Trump can't be on the phone yelling and screaming and telling other congresspeople what the fuck to do while he's in a courtroom. He can't do that. And because he can't do that, no one else knows what to do. Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz and some of these other lackeys that he's got in Congress that do his bidding to pressure Mike Johnson, MAGA Mike Johnson, or anyone for that matter. When Kevin McCarthy was Speaker, he would call Kevin McCarthy. I'm sure he's talked to MAGA Mike on the phone several times about yesterday's statement, where MAGA Mike has gotten briefings, the truth about Putin, Xi Jinping of China, and Iran. And he even said in front of a microphone, this is an axis of evil. And truly, they're behind a lot of the shenanigans that happened in Israel and Gaza. And Bibi Netanyahu is part of that axis of evil. The Israeli government isn't, but you damn sure better bet the person running it is, that fucking fascist. And they don't want democracy. These people don't want democracy. And I believe that MAGA Mike Johnson decided that, you know, I'm not going to be speaker either way, right? There's no way out of this. I'm going to have my seat vacated, and history is going to tell the story that I failed. So am I going to get one last success before I fail? Because a speaker who gets vacated is a failure. It doesn't matter what they did prior to that vacation. To be vacated as a speaker from one vote on the House floor means that you suck, and it sucks to suck. Mike Johnson is not a good speaker. Mike Johnson really isn't even a good person. If you want to, he's still a human being. He still deserves some level of respect, but he won't get much of it from me, nor should he get much of it from almost anyone, because of how his worldview is and how he dehumanizes fucking people. But he is still a human himself. So he has, you know, feelings and emotions. And I'm sure when he went down to visit the emotionless Fuhrer, Lord, this guy all hopped up on Adderall, I'm sure it made him realize that it doesn't matter what he does with his one-person majority, that his majority lies with like-minded people who want to protect democracy around the world. And it's not the Republican Party that wants to protect democracy around the world. Fuck. I mean, even the pirate from Texas. You know what I'm talking about? The congressman with an eye patch, the eye patch guy. Even that shit stain knows. That if they give ground to Vladimir Putin in Ukraine, that could be the start to the fall of democracy all around the world. Because he's not going to stop in Ukraine. Yes, Dan Crenshaw. Sorry, everyone's wondering who I'm talking about. Dan Crenshaw is the guy. Arr, matey, Captain Dan Crenshaw. Of the Black Pearl. Why does he wear the fucking eye patch? You know that guy's got a glass eye. Even when he's got sunglasses on, he's wearing the eye patch. Get the fuck out of here, man. Pretending to be tough and shit. Come on, man. Get the fuck out of here. Anywho, even that dipshit has seen the writing on the wall that it is not a good idea for the Republican Party or Republican congressman to be wanting and cheering for Putin to win and to steal away Ukraine's democracy, no matter how corrupt it is, right? I mean, there's plenty of reason that you could say, well, Ukraine's not that great of a democracy. It's corrupt. There's a lot of corruption there. Well, yes, yeah, sure, certainly. Any government, any form of a nation is going to have some sort of corruption in it. Does it mean that democracy is bad just because Ukraine's democracy has suffered from corruption the last two, almost three decades? I mean, certainly it's not a reason to throw the baby out with the bathwater here. It's worth protecting. And I believe that Mike Johnson has come to the theory that it will be his legacy. That's what I believe. It's not because Mike Johnson somehow has strength and fortitude. I mean, he's a coward. He's a goddamn coward. The guy was summoned down to Mar-a-Lago and went to kiss the Cheeto ring of the fentanyl fear her. So no, he's not strong. He's not the semblance of strength. I mean, fuck. They yelled and screamed about getting a border package and border security. Biden called their bluff. That Democratic senators in the Senate called their bluff. Worked with a Nazi himself from Oklahoma. The alien, the men in black looking senator from Oklahoma. And what did Mike Johnson do as soon as the fentanyl fear her told him kill the deal? He killed the deal. So just because Mike Johnson seems to be displaying some sort of courage here, don't get confused. I believe that MAGA Mike Johnson is protecting what legacy he think he will have. And I think he's using any kind of opportunity that he might have to do that. And the opportunity of Donald Trump sitting in court, not being able to be on the telephone, yelling and screaming and dictating orders of what they're going to do in the House and what they're not going to do in the House, has enabled Mike Johnson a lot of space to operate to protect his legacy, because Mike Johnson knows he's going to have his seat vacated, whether he passes aid to Ukraine or not. I think he's done that math. He's probably not good at math. He does a lot of maganomics, but he has done the math. And when he went down to Mar-a-Lago to visit his Republican Jesus, I think that he actually was probably given an alternative. You know, you either do what I say or you're gone. And anything other than what what Trump says means the vacation of Mike Johnson from the Speaker of the House. But I'm okay with Trump being tied up in a courtroom, getting our legislative body in the House of Representatives to do their fucking jobs. I'm okay with that. That sounds good to me. I mean, if that's what it takes. And I think that's why the dude is bitching and pissing and moaning and printing off articles on the internet. I'm serious. I didn't know web browsers had a fucking print option anymore. I had no idea. I really didn't. I thought they did away with that a long time ago. Like when they did away with the headphone jack in the iPhone, you know what I mean? Like there used to be a fucking headphone jack in the iPhone. And there used to be a print button on Google Chrome. I don't think there is anymore. But apparently they figured out a way to print off shit off the internet and give it to him and let him stand there and whine and complain. But yes, we should all pitch in here at the Fuck'em Fam and get Grandpa Poopy Pants a pardon blanket. We should get him a pardon blanket. Speaking of what we should get to this interview. I'm very excited about this interview. And the reason why is because we're reading this book in the book club on the Discord server right now. It is White Rule Rage. I think I've been saying it wrong. Rule White Rage. It's kind of like how much wood, like I said earlier, how much wood could a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck could chuck wood. Now, I like to call it white Christian nationalism. That's my favorite. You know, that's my messaging and my narrative. I actually am going to ask them about white Christian nationalism today. This book is written by Tom. I'm making sure I say it right. I don't want to say it wrong. I was corrected earlier. Schaller, I think is it. And then Paul Waldman. So Tom and Paul are going to join me here after the break. And we are going to carry this on YouTube. I know a lot of times we cut off on YouTube to just go to Twitch because of some of the stuff that I have to deal with on YouTube. They want to try to ban me from YouTube because we like to say things that other people don't like to say. But here's the thing is that we are going to stick with this today. So if you're on YouTube, don't go anywhere. Stay right there. After the break, we are going to talk to Tom and Paul about their book, White Rule Rage. Now, us from the country, because I get to school these guys today, Tom and Paul. They get to talk to a person who grew up in white rule America under that rage that they wrote about. So I was raised that way. I know these things. And I watched a few interviews that they've done this morning. So I think this interview is going to be completely different. And I think we're going to get this here. And Tom and Paul are in the room. They're waiting there. So let's go to the break. When we come back from the break, we will be on YouTube. We will be on Twitch. We will have Facebook and X-Chan. Don't forget about Twitter. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with the authors of this book that we're reading in book club right after this. We better get him a pardon blanket. He's freezing in there. Get him a blanket.
We'll be right back. Mark, 60 seconds. This is the Tony Michaels Podcast.
Are you numb and alone after storming the Capitol? Have you been left out in the cold after stealing Nancy Pelosi's mail? Do you feel exposed to a government that doesn't share your patriotic values? If any of these describe you, then you're in luck. Hi, I'm Paul Gosar, and thanks to my new product, Pardon Blanket, I've got you covered. Pardon Blanket specifically works to make you feel safe and cozy after your involvement on January 6th. And if you're one of the other members of Congress who also helped with the attempted coup, Pardon Blanket will protect you too. Pardon Blanket is made of a sort of soft fleece and a layer of sheep's wool. And they're 100% made in the USA. Don't delay and get your Pardon Blanket today for just $99.99. Actual pardon's not guaranteed.
Jumping back into it, this is the Tony Michaels Podcast.
Welcome back to the show, the Tony Michaels Podcast, or Mayo Michaels Podcast, if you're watching X-Chan over there. People are confused. I think I'm running the Twitter account Mayo. All the MAGA trolls, they started this stuff up yesterday. I don't know. I neither can confirm nor deny whether I have control and access to that Twitter account or not. but I do have access to some great authors this morning of a book that we are reading in book club. Our book club loves this book, by the way. It gives a really good insight into the country folks out there that may or may not support Trumpism, but more importantly,
are white Christian nationalists. And that's my experience because I come from the country. That's right. I'm from rural Missouri, the Ozarks. I don't know. Maybe Paul and Tom have heard of the show Ozark. Paul and Tom, how are you today? How are you, fellas?
Good. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing wonderful. I always have fun. I have fun every single weekday, as it were. So here's what I want to ask. First off, because I watched a few interviews, and I think, you know, you guys doing this book, you have you've done a lot of insight and data research. But I don't know if you've ever actually been interviewed by someone who is from the country. Have you been interviewed by someone from the country like me?
Sure, we have, of course.
Okay, great, great. That's fantastic. That's fantastic because I'm from rural Missouri. I'm from a small town by the Lake of the Ozarks, if you guys are familiar with that part of the country, in central Missouri. And it's about 4,500 people when I grew up there, between 4 and 4,500 people, you know, fluctuated. And we had, in our town, just to give you a sense of how I grew up, there was three major employers in that town. One was a public school, which is still the largest employer in the town and in the county, as a matter of fact. The bank there, when I was a kid, there was a bank, and my dad actually worked at the bank. Now, the reason why the bank had so many workers, the banks don't have workers anymore, but they actually had a check processing on the second floor of that bank when they actually processed the checks by hand. And then there was a factory where they built electric motors. Through the years, you know, technology advanced. Those jobs were lost at the bank. The factory, because electric motors, it was very lucrative to move those factories across the border. You know, we think so many migrants come across the border here, but businesses migrate across that border and had migrated across that border. But it was kind of funny because the only really big employer now in that town is the school. And Republicans are after the schools now in our state. And it's weird to me because I am a product of what you guys describe in this book. But I have a rage of liberalism from the country, if that makes sense. And my rage, and probably the reason why I confuse a lot of people, is because my rage is pointed in a strategic way against the things that caused some of those problems in that towns. To give you a sense of the county, the only time when I lived in the county, when I was younger, voting, the only opportunity I had to vote for a Democrat was on a presidential ballot. That was about the only opportunity I actually had to vote. So Republicans in Missouri have controlled the state with supermajorities for almost 30 years. So the plight of people in Missouri and the town that I grew up in is a direct result of those politicians that they only had the choice to elect. But I guess my question to you is what makes this white Christian nationalism? Because that's the thing that I see as the problem in our country right now, is that Trump is a symptom of this disease, right? And the disease is white Christian nationalism. They're obviously not Christian, but tell me why it isn't white Christian nationalism.
Well, I think it is white Christian nationalism to some degree. I mean, rural communities are about 43% evangelical. Not all evangelicals are white Christian nationals. It's about 60% self-identify, according to Sam Perry and Andrew Whitehead and Philip Gorski and Catherine Stewart and Tim Alberta. There's a whole, really a legion now of white Christian national scholars, Robert Jones at PRRI, who are writing about this growing threat. We don't write about it that much. We just have a small section in chapter 6 about it. But I mean, I think you're ultimately right, Tony, that their views, according to PRI polls, white Christian nationalists tend to believe at least one and usually more of about five principles, including principles such as, you know, the Bible should supersede our constitutional law, and that in order to be a true American, you have to be either white and or Christian. These are beliefs that are antithetical to a secular and constitutional democracy. They're not exclusive to white rural America. They don't apply to all white rural Americans. There are a lot of white liberals like you.
Exactly.
Including some white liberal hippies in some of the most conservative parts of Oklahoma or Missouri or South Dakota or Idaho. So it's not a brush that we use to paint everybody. But it is a worrisome pattern, especially given the rapid demographic changes we're seeing in the country in terms of the rising numbers of non-whites and the rising number of people who aren't Christian.
So tell me why you think that, and I've listened to a couple interviews, but tell me why you think that white rural America is so attracted to Trump. And I'll follow up with what I know it to be, because I actually experienced it. I see it. I grew up with it. I grew up as a racist. I didn't know any better until I got of age of reason. And I actually, I don't know, met some black people and talked to them and realized, oh, they're not what I was lied to, you know? So all that was underpinning of that racism was lies. I think that's why my rage is pointing in that direction. But tell me why you think, from your research, why do you think white people in the country, as us country folks would say, support Trump? What is it, do you think, is it about Trump?
Well, it's a complicated story. So I think you have to start with the very real problems that folks in rural America have suffered, and that kind of laid the foundation. So we have seen the departure of manufacturing jobs. You know, as you said, in a lot of rural places, the biggest employers, it's no longer a factory. It's the school district and maybe the closest local hospital. And that's what the biggest employers are. So you've lost that kind of manufacturing base. Those were good jobs that people could get right out of high school. You didn't need a college degree. You could make a middle-class living. Maybe you even had a union representing you that got you good benefits. And that is gone in a lot of rural places. And so you're seeing the decline of economic opportunity. There's a lot of brain drain or out-migration of ambitious young people. There's population loss. And that has left a lot of people in rural America feeling like they have been left behind by the changing economy, oftentimes by the culture. And you have, in a lot of places, very homogeneous communities that look around, where people look around at the larger world and say, I don't like this increasing diversity. I don't like immigration. I don't like this nation that is being created and that is changing all the time, when what I like is this community that doesn't change. And that's kind of part of the ideology in some ways of rural America, is that it's unchanging. And it's very much rooted in the past and nostalgia for the past. And so you have this sort of simmering discontent that doesn't really have a place to go for a long time. And even though white rural America is beginning to drift more and more toward the Republican Party, you know, for a long time, the difference wasn't that great. Maybe Republicans do a little bit better in rural areas, but not much. Then you get to the Obama years, and Republicans nominate two guys who really don't excite rural Americans very much. John McCain, Mitt Romney. It's not the kind of person who's really going to get them jazzed. The discontent over the fact of a black president begins to simmer and grow. And then along comes Donald Trump in 2016. And what does he say to people? First of all, he says, you're right. You have been screwed over by everything that has happened. And it's the product of this conspiracy of elites in both parties who hate you and look down on you. And this is critical. He says that all of your worst instincts, your worst self, you don't have to keep a hold on that. The world is telling you that you should be courteous to people, and you should be nice, and you should, you know, express these kinds of liberal ideas about everybody being equal and being inclusive. And Trump says, no, 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 no. You can let your worst self out. You can be as bigoted as you want. You can be angry. You can let that rage flow through you and feel its power. And I am going to be the expression of that power. And for a lot of people, it was really thrilling. And he also told them that we can turn back the clock and undo all the changes that happened in American society. After all, what is the key word in his slogan, Make America Great Again? It's again. And he's telling them that we can undo all that stuff. We can make America less diverse. We can throw out all the immigrants. We can, you know, grab women by the pussy again. We can do whatever we want. This is the future that he is offering them. It's something that undoes all the changes that have made them mad and allows them to express themselves in a way that is unconstrained. That's what he was offering them. And a lot of times, I think that a lot of people in rural America knew that a lot of it was a lie. You know, when he tells people in coal country that he's going to bring back the coal jobs, do they really believe it? I don't think so. But they wanted somebody who would say it, who wouldn't say, oh, you know, we're going to make a transition to some kind of a future that will allow you to have good jobs again. And maybe you'll learn how to code and all these things that they greeted with great skepticism. Trump just comes along and says, no, we're going to just make everything the way it was. And everybody cheered. And the fact that he didn't deliver on those promises in material terms, that didn't change anything. You know, one of the pieces of data that we quote all the time is that according to the Pew Research Center's validated voter study, which is probably the best assessment of who people voted for in different subgroups, rural whites, 62% of them voted for Trump in 2016. 4 years later, after COVID, after all those promises that weren't fulfilled, 71% voted for him, even though the rest of the country was moving away and toward Joe Biden. So their love for him only increased over that time. So that begins to get at why he was so appealing, even though it turned out that they didn't care if he was like them or understood their lives or, you know, got down and milked a cow when he visited a rural area. None of that stuff mattered. In the same way, you know, we're talking about Christian nationalism, in the same way with evangelical Christians, it turned out they didn't care about whether or not you knew the hymns and you could quote the Bible and you were a genuine, sincere believer. They didn't care about that stuff either. That wasn't what they wanted. And the really empathizing and understanding rural life wasn't what rural people wanted either.
Well, I'm glad you went to the worst version of themselves, because this is my personal experience. This is not some, you know, far off story. When I grew up in this town, there was no POC. There's no people of color. There's no black people. There really wasn't Hispanics. There was a few families, but they weren't those kind of black people. You know what I mean? That's how the community felt. But because there was no one to be racist against, right? The town was, I mean, it was growing up in that town, the racism was out front. And it was easy to tell racist jokes. It was easy to say racist things because it was all white people. And they were all racist white people, bigoted white people. So it was ha ha ha, yuckity yuck yuck, right? Now, but you still have to have a system that divides people in a community, right? That's what the power structure wants to have most times. And so there wasn't the race in the community. It was the classism in the community. So when you start to, you know, and maybe there's a couple phrases that you could use to describe this, those people on the other side of the tracks, right? But in our town, the people on the other side of the tracks were still white. It was all white. But those people were the N-words with the hard R in the town, even though they were white, right? So there's this classism structure that starts to take place. And I believe what rural white people or country folk that lives in towns like I grew up in, they see Donald Trump as the rich white trash, if you want to give it a word. And he's the billionaire from the other side of the tracks, right? He's the billionaire from the other side of the tracks. He's not supposed to be rich. He doesn't look rich. He didn't talk rich. I mean, really, without the government funding his dad's HUD housing, he wouldn't have been who he is today. So I believe that is some of their association with him, is that he was never accepted in the elite class because of who he is and how he operates. And they were never accepted into the power structure in their community because of how they operate and how they are, how they dress and how they talk, that sort of thing. What jobs they have, what side of the tracks they may live in, what trailer parks they may live in. So that's where they really started to get cozy with him. And he really found his voice with those style of people. Now, association, as you fellas probably know, is a very, very, very strong thing. We've seen this week Bill Barr turn again and support Donald Trump because for some reason the economy just is, you know, in shambles. I mean, I don't know if you guys have heard, the unemployment's as low as it's ever been. The stock market's as high as it's, I mean, the economy's just in complete shambles. It's horrible. You guys should really go check your 401k today. I'm sure it's in tough shape. But that's the thing, is that these lies that are told, right? But they're always been told. They've been told in these rural communities forever that the people on the other side of the tracks aren't good enough, that the job that you have isn't good enough to be part of what you want to be a part of. How you dress, you know, those overalls that you wear and the tattered T-shirt you wear because that's all you can afford, that's not good enough in our community. And I believe that's really how he, what resonated with those folks, with Trump. Is there any sense that maybe we miss the simple thing when we want to make something so complicated that they do see themselves in Trump, even though he's a New York elite, because he's not actually a New York elite, because the elite didn't want him as part of their group.
You know, I'm sure Tom has something to say, but I'll just add one quick thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
In agreement with you that, yes, Trump himself, as rich as he may be, he is resentful. He's angry. He feels like other people look down on him and think they're better than him. He's always, trying to get acceptance. And he has this kind of vulgar representation of wealth that a lot of people, I think, feel like if I was rich, that's what I'd do. I'd buy a big plane and slap my name on the side, and I'd date a bunch of supermodels and cheat on my wife, and I'd crap on a gold toilet. That's who I'd be.
I don't want to lose that point. I don't want to lose that point. Tom, go ahead. And then I want to follow up on that point, because that's a great conversation piece with rural country people. There.
Yeah, I think, can you guys hear me okay? Because my screen is frozen, but okay, great. I think the resentment, and that's what we're talking about. The title says White Rural Rage, but we only use that word about a half dozen times in the book. We're really talking about a core political science and sociological construct called resentment. As Paul already pointed out in his previous answer, some of that is temporal, right? It's about the notion that things are not as good now as they used to be. Can we go back? Can we get in a time machine somehow to remember a past that probably is venerated beyond how great it really was. But even if it was great, there's this notion about going backwards. The other component to the resentment is that somebody else is doing better, right? And they maybe weren't as doing as well, or you didn't have to compete with them back in that, you know, venerated past. And that means historically, you know, women and minorities who were kept out of, you know, conversations about political power and conversations about, you know, the American dream and competing for that dream. And so we know, I mean, I don't know if there's a study of rural Missourians, but we know that the sort of landmark book of the Trump era, other than J.D. Vance's Hillbilly Elegy, which is a whole other story, is Catherine Kramer's book, The Politics of Resentment, where she interviewed hundreds of people in rural Wisconsin. And what she found is that their resentments are directed at two places in the state. One is Madison, where the state university is and where the state, you know, offices and state capital and all the government employees are. And the other, of course, is the other M, as she calls them, the M&Ms, Madison and Milwaukee, which is the blackest county, even though it's only like 47% African American. It's not even majority black. And the notion and the sentiment that she heard, you know, not from every single rural white person, but from many of them, was that all the benefits, all the attention, all the power is centrally located in those two places, in Dane County, Madison, where all the power is and the decisions are made. And it is literally the state capital. And in Milwaukee, because they get all the benefits and we get nothing, and we work hard and pay taxes and they don't, and they get our taxes redistributed from us to them, which is, you know, not true. I mean, the federal government and state governments have a variety of programs targeted specifically to rural communities. So this resentment is really built on sort of, like I said, a temporal foundation and a comparative foundation that somebody is doing better and they never used to be like this. And so we need to go back. And Trump sort of, as Paul pointed out, and as you, I think you're correct in pointing out too, is like this notion of victimhood, right? That we're the victims. Trump is a victim. You know, he's not really embraced by old money New York's, society. And we're not embraced because the country is sort of changing and moving past us, and we're not the preferred minority anymore. And something needs to change, and something needs to stop, and something needs to go back. And we need some retribution, as Trump is promising us.
So there's two moments that I want to bring up to you fellas about that point, about the resentment. There's one moment at the press corps and at the White House correspondents' dinner, where Barack Obama just moments before ordered for Osama bin Laden to be killed. And he stood up and made jokes about Trump and basically dressed him down in front of the entire, what Trump felt like the entire world. And Trump hates Obama for a lot of different reasons, but that's really where he seeks his resentment, is because Obama mocked him and made a fool of him without his permission in that room. And there's another moment that I think really gets under Trump's skin, and it makes rural people, white Christian nationalists really feel his resentment and relate to him, is when Michael Bloomberg said, "No, I'm an actual billionaire." And he was pointing that comment at Donald Trump when Donald Trump was in the room. Those are two moments that you can pick out in recent history where Donald Trump was mocked in the open by what he desired to be. He desired to be part of the political structure. He desired to be part of the money structure of the country and the power structure of the country. And those two people, Barack Obama, Michael Bloomberg, you know, took him down a notch. And I think people relate to that, because I think when Barack Obama said certain things on the campaign, you know, about the Bible and their guns, you know, they got a little itchy, right? Because as you fellows alluded to earlier, that there is this thing where rural people are like, well, I want something to go back to this time where I didn't have to work as hard, right? But there's also, I don't know if people know this, but there's also this future, this forward-looking part of country culture, right? They're always looking forward. It's in our music, in country music. We love country music in the country. And there's this we take the past to look forward, right? That's kind of how that works in that culture. But here's the thing, is that if you convince people who have plight, especially economic plight, that is designed to make those people have economic plight from a certain political party so that they can point and say, see, you're the victim and they're to blame, even though that political party, the Republican Party, may have power. Because that's what in Missouri they've done for the last 30 years. They've had a supermajority, and they point to, oh, look at the Democrats in D.C. It's all their fault of the state's economic problem, the state's policy problem. How is it Democrats' fault in the executive branch in the United States government? But they do it very effectively. And how they do it is they say two things. You need to be concerned about two things that will never apply to you. One, and then they're talking to white men here. One is procedures that have to do with pregnancy. That is one thing you have to be concerned about because of religion. And number two is that one day you may be rich and you may not want to pay taxes. And you're going to be rich one day, guarantee it. And that is the other reason why they love Donald Trump so much, is because he's the guy who became rich, right? They don't go back and look past the Trump Tower and the casino thing, right? They don't see that he was given what he was given. But they also see him as a victim of, and you guys said grab him by the pussy earlier, and I'm glad you said that on this show, because you're welcome to say any words that would come to your mind on this show. But the fact that he was a victim, you know, he was a victim when people accused him of certain things, especially sexual harassment and sexual assault. And they really, because they feel that sentiment of there's two things that have nothing to do with you. The procedures around pregnancy, and you want to have lower taxes because one day you may be rich. And it's that forward looking thing. So you look back to what might be great again in 1864. As Arizona would say, and you use that to look forward of what can be great in the future. And that's where they're at, is they're at a place where they want something they can't have. They know they can't have it, right? So what they do is they take their rage, as you guys have on the cover of the book, and they use it as a tool and a weapon to punish everyone else. And they use it to punish everyone else to elect people like Donald Trump, but more than anything, Marjorie Taylor Greene's, Matt Gaetz, Lauren Boebert's. And really, the sad part is in the state legislatures, they elect people who are much more vile. And I know it feels like that's not possible to be more vile and to come after people's rights, their civil rights, their human rights, their dignity than some of those people in Congress. But what is said in these state houses, and this is the thing that I try to point out, and the thing that's said in the state houses, but more than anything to these parishioners in these churches where this white Christian nationalism is running rampant, the vile things that they say don't, I mean, what Trump says and Marjorie Taylor Greene don't hold in comparison what they say. And I believe that's why white Christian nationalism really is the disease that we're suffering from in this country, because they are truly deluding these people in their plight and using their plight to dilute them in this situation to where they want to go back to 1864. So I want to ask you guys the 1864 question. Did you guys see in your book when you were writing this thing, are you like, you know, there's just no way that they're going to message this thing to be 1864, right? Like, and they're going to be cheering it. They the other day, the Arizona Republicans blocked Democrats from doing anything to help Republicans undo this messaging that they're going back to 1864. Democrats are trying to help Republicans here undo this mess that they've got themselves into Arizona, which will only help them win more elections. And they said, no, we want to go back to 1864. So did you guys see that, like, on your bingo card when you're writing this book, that they're going to lean into this stuff even more?
Well, I saw more 1964 than 1864, if we're being honest, right, Paul? I mean, right. I think they want to go back, but even I'm shocked that they want to go that far back. Paul, what do you think?
Yeah, and I think a lot of the politics that we see today is about people being resistant to change. And, you know, you could say that's sort of the essence of conservatism and how it always has been, is about seeing what's changing in society and wanting to undo it. And often it's just.
Can I stop you there? Can I stop you there, though? Let me ask you something really quick about conservatism. I mean, if they really were conservatives, because this is the thing that I say all the time, that their fascism has been thin veiled by conservatism for about four decades. You know, them being conservative is all bullshit. That's bullshit. Because if they really were conservative, they would want to conserve what is law. They would want to conserve the position that is now. They would not want to undo and go back to 1864 and make women pieces of property. And by the way, I do want to mention in 1864, there was other demographics that were also pieces of property back then too. So I get a little fired up when I hear people say that they're conservative. So I just want to throw that out there. Sorry, I didn't mean to step in here.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of it is about preserving certain kinds of hierarchies. And when those hierarchies are challenged, then yes, turning it back so you can reassert them. You know,
not policies, the power structure is what you're speaking to. Okay. Yeah.
So if you look at, for instance, controversies over what sort of books are going to be in libraries or what's going to be taught in school about race, the idea is that you have to kind of undo certain kinds of consciousness where people who had traditionally been shut out are saying, you know, now it's we want books about our experience to be in libraries. We want to take kind of a fundamental look at how race operates in society.
And wait, you mean there's other people than just white people in this country? Is that what you're saying?
Well, that's the thing. And so, I mean, if you look at all of those laws that have been passed in Republican states about how race is taught in schools, one of the things that most of them have in common is that they say explicitly that nothing will be allowed to be taught that will essentially make white kids feel bad. That's what they want to make sure doesn't happen anymore. And you find people like Donald Trump, you know, who grew up in Queens and lived most of his life in Manhattan, becoming a champion of keeping Confederate monuments up. And why were those Confederate monuments put up in the first place? Well, it was a reassertion of white supremacy. It happened, in a couple of different waves, first during Reconstruction and then during the Civil Rights Movement. They started putting up all these Confederate monuments to basically tell black people, don't forget who's in charge here. And Donald Trump, why should he care, you know, whether a military base is named after a Confederate general? You know, do you think Donald Trump can tell you who Braxton Bragg was? No, but he knows that Fort Bragg really ought to be named Fort Bragg. And so it's this way of saying, like, you know, I am going to reassert these hierarchies that you feel, especially people in rural areas, you feel were a place where a time and a condition where you were on top and everybody else was kind of an afterthought. And now, if you're one of those people in those rural areas, you feel, you know, suddenly or in the last few years, like you're not on top anymore. You go down to, you know, maybe there are more immigrants coming into your community, and you go down to the supermarket and there are people speaking Spanish, and you turn on TV and you see all these interracial couples and TV ads. And all of this stuff is very, very threatening. And it makes you feel like, hey, I used to be on top here. And so a lot of what Trump offers people is this kind of psychic satisfaction. You know, it's not about changing the material conditions of our lives, but things like one of my favorite examples is him saying, we're going to build the wall and make Mexico pay for it. Now, that was never going to happen. No serious person ever thinks that it was going to happen. And in terms of the money, who cares? You know, we're a rich country. They're a poor country. What does it matter? The whole point is this idea of we're going to take those Mexicans and make them get down on their knees and pull out their wallets and hand us the money. It's about forcing them to be humiliated before us. And that will mean that we will be strong again. And for a lot of people who felt like they were once strong, but now they're not strong anymore. The culture has moved past them. Maybe they don't have the same job that they used to have that was so secure and gave them a living that they could provide for a family for. And they feel like their kind of power, especially for men, that their power has been taken away from them. And there's all these, you know, rules now about what you're allowed to call people and not allowed to call people. And your own kids are telling you that you're being, you know, you're being insulting, or you're being racist, or you're being homophobic. And you all of a sudden feel like you're not the one who's in charge anymore. And Trump said, I'm going to put you back in charge. And that is really, really powerful for people.
You know, looping back around to the wall in Mexico, you know, I said earlier that the factory in our town, because Republicans under George W. Bush made it very easy for that factory to pick up and leave our community and go to Mexico. Matter of fact, it was almost ridiculously stupid for them not to do that. And they did. And they walked away from our community. And the Republican power structure in that community, you know, and they weren't really viewed as Republicans at the time because it was the only people to vote for. So they were just the people that you voted for. You know what I mean? I mean, when you went to vote for mayor, there was one choice. When you went to vote for the county commissions, there was a few choices, and they were all Republicans because that was the power structure in the community. Well, it was the Republicans that drove that factory out. It was the Republicans in that community that refused to invite other manufacturers to the town because they were scared that that manufacturer might compete with the manufacturer that had been there for decades. You know what I mean? So they were terrified of this economic situation, right? But it only bred resentment in the community when the party that set the policies to make sure that the factory left our town and went to the country of Mexico. You know, they were like, well, blame it on the Mexicans. You know, they're the ones that took your factory. And that's the feeling everyone got, was like, oh, well, they're just going to give Mexicans our jobs, you know, and that's how it started to breed and how it started to feel, you know, and that resentment, as we've been saying, got pointed towards a certain group of people. I do want to bring up one thing, because I don't know how long you fellas have. We've been going for about a half hour now, and I don't know if you have a heart out, but someone said they're going to, Tom, I think it was you, said you're going to the a museum in Louisville, right?
Yeah.
Which museum are you going to?
The new Muhammad Ali Museum.
Yeah, I want to show you. I got Muhammad Ali right here. I got it right here. I appreciate Muhammad Ali. I'm excited that you're going to get to go. I hope that you have fun in Louisville. We talked about the Louisville Slugger Museum yesterday with Cliff Schechter.
I've been there, but I don't think the Muhammad Ali Museum was there when I was in Louisville last.
I don't think it was either. When I was a young kid, as a teenager, we went to Louisville and I went to the museum. But speaking of Louisville, that's Kentucky, which I want to get to one more thing here. And because I want to give hope to folks out there, because I think that's one thing when we talk about stuff like this, when we talk about white Christian nationalism, when we talk about the white resentment that may happen in country and rural areas, I want to give them hope, because these people are actually liberals. They just don't know it. They don't know it. I really, truly believe that they're deep down inside what we may call conservative country. They do have liberal values. Let me give you an example. If you went to rural Missouri, the town that I was from, and you went to just the grocery store, cafe, or, you know, at the gas station, you started asking people, do you want Americans to go broke because of a medical bill? Do you think that Americans deserve to have a decent fucking wage? Right? Do you think that Americans deserve that? Do you think Americans shouldn't go broke because of a medical bill? They shouldn't be saddled with years and years worth of debt because they want to seek an education. I think you're going to get all the same answers that you would get if you walked into a very liberal area, if you ask those questions that way. And I think that's one thing that liberals in this country have done wrong, their messaging and how they talk to, but more importantly, they talk at country folks, because those people are more liberal than we would ever give them credit. They would give themselves credit for. Liberals, you know, Republicans made that a bad word. You know, it's a gross word. Oh, you don't want to be liberal, but it's not really. Liberal is the foundation and the strength of our democracy. It's the strength of any Western democracy that we have around the world, liberalism. It's not the weakness. It is the foundation and the strength. And if we shine light, and by we, I mean the people in this country, the citizens of this country, shine light into what our strength of our country is, I think there can be a way to speak to people who believe that they are Trump supporters for one reason or other. They do buy into white Christian nationalism for one reason or another. But deep down, somewhere inside them, there's still this American experience. There's still this American thing that they hold on to, that they want to continue. And I think the Democrats are doing a better job. I think the Biden administration is doing a better job at this. But do you fellas see in your research what I'm talking about, that there's some sort of underlying liberalism that even these country folks or these people who have this white rage maybe in rural areas have? Do you think there's an underlying liberalism that they, if they just had the right messaging, if they just had the right opportunity, that they would take and run with?
I don't know if it's messaging, but you know, I just was teaching my students this week. Liliana Mason, who's a colleague of mine, used to teach at University of Maryland College Park, is now up at Johns Hopkins. She's written at length about how identity overwhelms ideology and positions, and that people are actually closer together than they realize or they think, because we're so separated by race and gender and orientation and region and rural, urban, and so forth. So as a classic example, I show my students like four different case studies. One, for example, is like African-Americans changed their positions very quickly, almost overnight, when Obama changed his position on gay rights, right? Because their identity is connected to his identity, and he is a moral and leader and gatekeeper for that community, so they change. The other example I show them a few, is the fact that when you poll Trump voters on the top 10 provisions in the Affordable Care Act, they support, with a majority support, 8 of the 10. They're about even on the 9th, and the only one that a majority of Republicans and a majority of other Americans as well oppose is the individual mandate. So out of the 10 major provisions, let's say they support 8.5, because they support 8 of them and are tied on one and oppose the other. But if you ask them, do they support the Affordable Care Act? And certainly if you call it Obamacare, they're overwhelmingly opposed to it. So they want their kids to have insurance until they're 26. They want there to be a cap on out-of-pocket costs. They want there to be no exclusion of people with pre-existing conditions. They love the bill, but they hate the law. And so how do you get people to support something that they actually support? And the reason that they don't, I think, is wrapped up in ideology and identity, not ideology, but identity. Obama supports it. The Democrats want it. I must oppose it, even if it's in my best interest, which is why of the 10 states that still haven't adopted the Medicaid expansion under Obamacare, 9 of the 10 are red rock Republican states, with the exception of Wisconsin, which is basically the most purple state in the union. All the blue states have adopted it, and many now, reluctantly, red states have come around to realizing that opposing the Medicaid expansion is literally lowering the insurance rates for their poorest individuals, many of whom are rural, and many of those rural folks are white. And so there is a liberalism there about policy, but in order to get people to understand it and, more to the point, support it, you have to get them to strip aside this incessant talk that they get daily on Fox and OANN and Newsmax, and hourly somewhere by some conservative commentator telling them, you have to oppose, you have to repeal and replace Obamacare. And so they vote for the politicians who promise that, having no idea what's in it or the fact that they like most of it. And so they end up voting against something based on identity rather than ideology or policy substance. It's sad.
Yeah, it is. And I think it can go back to a messaging problem. A good example is, I don't know if you guys heard this, couple of years ago, the Supreme Court, there was a big ruling called Roe v. Wade. You guys hear that? They overturned that. And what has happened since then, and I don't know if you heard this, there's been a lot of real polls at ballot boxes. And almost every, actually, I think every single one of them at a ballot box has confirmed that this country is very liberal when it comes to women's health care and their right to health care. And they don't want to criminalize pregnancies. They want to have women to have privacy in their doctor's offices, even in states like Ohio and Kentucky, which you're going to the museum today. And in states like Missouri, they're going to be on the ballot. We know Florida is going to have a referendum on their ballot for these measures. And I think overwhelmingly rural white people are going to do weird things. Okay. And they're going to do weird things. They're going to go vote for people's rights, and they're going to vote for people who are going to try to take away people's rights. It's very strange. It happened in Missouri. Let me give you an example here in the last Senate race. There was a guy, Eric Schmidt. He was the attorney general here. Real scumbag. I mean, he loved to spend not only the state's money, but he loved to spend the school district's money because of children's genitalia or masks that didn't exist in these schools. He would spend all kinds of money of the state's money to make a political point. He's also one of the most anti-marijuana senators in the United States Senate right now. And he was a very anti-marijuana attorney general for the state of Missouri. What's funny is when he was elected senator for Missouri, United States Senator Eric Schmidt was, there was also a referendum on the ballot there to get recreational marijuana. Overwhelmingly, this state voted for recreational marijuana. And then they put in power a U.S. Senate seat, only two in a state. If people aren't aware, there's only two in a state. They gave him the power, who is, he's one of the most anti-marijuana senators that probably are sitting in the United States Senate right now. And it's wild stuff. Kansas did the same thing. Kansas went and voted for a referendum to protect women's rights. And then they put the people in power that want to take away women's rights. And I always say the word affiliation. I always say the word affiliation because it's affiliation kind of thing. It's what we saw Bill Barr do the other day when he's like, I'm going to support the Republican nominee because I's a Republican. And I think more are going to follow him. And I think it is the it's not Trump. It is the Heritage Foundation. It is Project 2025 that they so desire. It is the idea that they don't want democracy. White Christian nationalism does not want democracy. White Christian nationalism does not survive very well in the power structure of democracy. So is it a thing, but can we be hopeful that we can message in a way to get these referendums on ballots? That we can get referendums in Arizona, in Florida, in Missouri, and get people to the polls to understand and message correctly to people who will vote in their own interest, not because of affiliation, not because of identity, as you called it. Can we get them to vote that way? What do you think?
Yeah, you know, the state of Missouri is a great example. When those kinds of questions are divorced from that identity, divorced from party, you get very different results. And so in Missouri, you have had ballot initiatives that not only legalized marijuana, but accepted the Medicaid expansion of the Affordable Care Act. There was a ballot initiative that overturned a law passed by the legislature to create right to work. So you have all of these pretty liberal results coming in ballot initiatives in Missouri, even though it's a place that is run top to bottom by Republicans and where it's really, really hard for a Democrat to get elected. Now, as it happens, the Republicans who run the state legislature want to kind of monkey with the ballot initiative process. They want to basically create like an electoral college for ballot initiatives where you'd have to win not only statewide, but in at least 5 of the 8 congressional districts, many of which are rural, so that kind of creates the opportunity for them to basically veto what the majority of Missourians want. But that demonstrates that there are a lot of questions on which even people in red states actually have liberal policy leanings.
Yes, they do.
And it's only because they've built those walls of identity and party affiliation so high that you can't break past them, even if you've got a candidate who is, you know, telling people, I want to do all the same things that you want to do. But if he's got a D next to his name, it's a real problem. And, you know, I've interviewed Lucas Kuntz, who's going to be the Democratic, or I guess he's the Democratic nominee. Yeah. You know, he's the kind of guy, you know, he's a veteran. He's
everything, you know, very, Josh. He's everything Josh Hawley lies about being.
I'll say it that way.
And but, you know, he's having a real tough time, and is you know, chances are, unfortunately, he's probably going to lose because he's got a D next to his name, even though in almost every way you could think of, he is closer to the people in Missouri than Holly is.
Well, and that's what we have to give people hope for, because I think what we need to do is we need a message to make sure people engage in their democracy, to make sure people who do believe in their democracy and in their country and in the Constitution, that they get out there and they use their talents in a certain way. And I am so happy that you fellas are using your talents in a way to get people to engage in their democracy. And I'm sure you pissed a lot of people off with the title of this book. I don't know if it was your intention or not. I'd love for you guys to come back. You guys can come back together individually anytime you want. I do want to tell the audience that tonight at 6 p.m. Eastern on our Discord server, the Library of Democracy is sponsoring the Fuck 'em Fam Book Club, and they are reading White Rule Rage. White Rule Rage. And I think they're doing it for a couple more weeks. And you fellows are invited to those sessions if you'd like to hear what people are saying about your book in our book club. And it's a great conversation. It's very organic. I actually, it's one of my favorite things that we do in our community here at the Tony Michaels Podcast is this book club. It wasn't my idea. It was the community's idea. And they read Rachel Bitticoffer's book, Hit 'Em Where It Hurts. Your book is now on the slate, and I have a few others. And I really think your book and Rachel's book could be done again before the election, because it is so important to know who you are messaging to when you're messaging to them. And I think that's the thing that we really need to do better as pro-democracy people in this country, is message to our fellow Americans a lot better. Not have so much data and statistics. And I know you fellas are probably data and statistics type guys, but if we get away from trying to message, hey, this is the whole set of data that you need to know the stuff that to vote in your interest. It's pretty simple. Look, you don't want to go broke because of a medical bill. You don't want to be tied to college debt for the rest of your life. You want to get a good education, and you know, these are things that Americans want. You want a decent fucking wage. And these are things that we can message to these folks that do have that underlying liberalism, because I believe Lucas can have a chance if we get the right coalition of people to go vote for that referendum and get that petition on the ballot in November. So it's all about the ballot. But tonight it's going to be about your book and the book club. Fellas,
well, thanks for supporting us and having the book club. We appreciate it.
Yeah. Do you guys have one last word before you go? Anything that you want to add in?
No, just hope people read the book and enjoy it. And thanks for your support,
Tony. Yeah, we'll put a link to the book, and they'll talk about it tonight in the book club. And again, you fellas are always welcome back anytime you want. And I'll probably invite you back. Say, hey, come on and talk about this thing here and this thing here and this thing here. So I appreciate you guys contacting me, and I'm glad we got you on. Everyone, stick around. We'll be right back. Tom, Paul, White, Rule Wage tonight, 6 p.m. on the Discord server. Go to thetonymichaels.com, hit the Discord server. Make sure you download the app. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. I promise I'm not going to dump YouTube today. Are you guys hungry? I'm hungry. How about some pizza?
We'll be right back. Mark, 60 seconds. This is the Tony Michaels Podcast.
Are you ready for best pizza of life? Bring friends down to Pepperoni Hug Spot. Our chefs make pizza with heart and special touch. Cheese, pepperoni, vegetable, and more secret things. Need delivery? Pizzas come fast. Knock, knock, who's there? Pizza magic. Eat Pepperoni Hug Spot pizza. Your tummy say thank you. Your mouth say, mmm. Pepperoni Hug Spot. It's like family, but with more cheese.
Catch Tony's Twitch stream, The Shit List Roundup, at twitch.tv/TheTonyMichaels. We're back to the King of Brilliance. This is the Tony Michaels Podcast.
That was a good interview. That was fun. You guys have fun? There's a lot of conversation. I think there's a lot more conversation that can be had about the country and country folk. You know what I'm talking about? You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Oh, shit, I still have the book club up. Well, go to the book club. God damn it. Go to the book club tonight, 6 p.m. White Rage by Harry and Balls. Oh, wait. I went the entire time without calling them to their face Harry and Balls. Those misfit toys over on Discord in the producer's corner. They tried to trick me into it. I'm telling you, they tried to trick me into it. No, you should get in the book club tonight. Let me show you how to get there. If you guys want to go have a conversation about this book that we just heard, some of the stuff, the research that they did for this book from the authors, you just go to thetonymichaels.com. Here it is right here. You can see our thumbnail from today. His struggle. Oh, we're going to play this clip of him whining and bitching and moaning. I think it's fantastic. The more he whines and bitches and moans, the worse it's going to get for him. But we don't want it to get worse for you. So go to thetonymichaels.com, hit subscribe at the top of the page. Go on down to memberships. This is where you get into the book club if you haven't already. Download the Discord app on your phone. This is the easiest way to do it. Trust me, this is how I do it when I go into the Discord server and go to the book club. Download the Discord app on your phone. Just search it in your app store, Discord. You'll find it, download it, and then hit one of these links, the book club or the Discord server. They both take you to the Discord. Go to the Welcome Center, hit the green check mark. That'll verify you, and then you'll be able to see the Discord, the entire Discord server, and you'll be able to see the book club. It'll be a room where people are talking in, and you'll see a bunch of people in there at 6 p.m. Eastern. They'll start to pour in there. There'll be dozens of people in there. I think we had almost, over 20 last week, I believe, for this book. We had more when Rachel Bitticoffer joined us for her book. And we're really trying to build this book club out, because not only does this group have great discussions about the books that they're reading, but they have really good ideas about how to engage and how to have conversations about these things. I think that's one thing that, you know, not to pat myself on the back, but I do well on this show, is to get you to think about certain things, maybe in a different way, maybe how to talk to someone, how to message. You know, that's kind of what Rachel Bitticoffer's book, Hit 'Em Where It Hurts, How to Save Democracy by Beating Republicans at Their Own Game. This White Rule Rage by Tom and Paul is a little different. It's talking more about where maybe to take advantage of the culture that Hit 'Em Where It Hurts does. But the messaging is important. It is very important. I think it's the most important thing. I don't know. I felt like I hadn't convinced Tom and Paul of that fully yet. That's why I'm going to have them back on. I'm going to make sure I drag them back on this show, maybe one at a time. Maybe that's it'll make it easier on me to convince them that the messaging is the problem. So many times, and not to, you know, knock on Tom and Paul there, because they were great guests and they got great information. These guys study this stuff. They've seen every single aspect of it, but I've lived it. And like I told them, I grew up as a bigot and a racist, because there was really no other way to grow up. I mean, it wasn't like my parents were like, you gotta say the N-word with a hard R. It was just the culture in the community, in the school. And one of the reasons why is because it was so easy to be that. It was so easy. It was so easy to do that. It was such an easy route to be accepted in the community. And really, honestly, if you were going to, you know, vocally speak against that culture, then you might not be as welcome. So it's just easier just to keep your mouth shut and pretend to be something that you may not be. It's kind of the same way in the Republican Party, isn't it? It's much easier just to shut your mouth and pretend to be a Trump supporter. Rather, you're a voter, or you're actually a sitting politician that's elected to one of our seats in our government. But at this point, at this avenue, at this intersection that we're on, and this timeline that we're in, it's getting more and more dangerous every day to be complacent. And sometimes, if you have the wrong message, and you're sending the wrong message, then maybe you're being complacent as well. Maybe not the, you know, reasons that you may think. And I have pushed the idea that you would say, don't go broke because of a medical bill. I think should be adopted. No one should ever say, no politician anywhere should ever say the word health insurance or health care. Unless you're talking about banning women's health care. That's a different story. That's another avenue. But when you're talking about the government actually providing services and providing funding for healthcare, you should never say the word healthcare, ever. Ever. They shouldn't say it. Just like when you're talking about women's health and their pregnancies, you shouldn't say the word abortion. You shouldn't. I mean, I just did. And I'm knocked down a few points because I said it. We really have to get something straight with ourselves. Because the pro-democracy coalition sometimes wants to outsmart ourselves. We do. We want to think we know more. We want to think we're smarter. We want to think we're better. And doggone it, people like us. They don't necessarily like us. They don't necessarily like us. It's not automatic just because you got a college degree and you're smart and you got a good job and you make a lot of money. Or that you have liberal views. Or you're an ally of the LGBTQ community. Or that you do not want women to be second-class citizens. Or you value the diversity and equity in this country. That doesn't automatically mean they're going to like you, right? I mean, that's what Jesus would do. But white Christian nationalists aren't actually Christian. That's the ruse. That's why they use the word Christian. That's why they bastardize the second half of the book. With the white muscle guy, you know, he's got the muscles and he's got the gun and the beard. Jesus, you know, that guy. He has evolved from white Jesus to militant Jesus, hasn't he? But it's the bastardization of the second half of that book that has really, really been able to pull one on the plight of rural white people. And don't get me wrong, rural white plight is real, but rural white plight comes with privilege. Whether they want to admit it or not, it most certainly fucking does. Listen, I am a rural white man. Okay, I come from central Missouri, from the Ozarks. And I am a two-time college dropout. I'm a convicted felon. I have been to federal prison, and I still receive privileges that no other demographic receives in this country. There is a lot of privileges that I receive that other demographics do not receive in this country. That is a real thing. And it is a thing that absolutely we should fight against. And I have vowed to use that privilege to smash privilege. But how can we do it? What must we do? I mean, we have to engage in our democracy every single day. We have to do that process, right? And you have to make sure that you're continuing to do that process every single day. You have to make sure that you're defending democracy at every step, even if it's not something that you fully agree with. Like the fact that I sat and defended, and sometimes I seemed alone in my commentary, that 14th Trump in Colorado was really stupid. It was really stupid and undermined our democracy is what it did. It undermined our democracy. I don't care what you say. I don't care how much you hate him. I hate that motherfucker too. And I wish he was in a pair of handcuffs and a yellow jumpsuit buried underneath the fucking prison right now. But we cannot sell out. We cannot sell out our liberalism and our democracy for one stupid bastard. We can't. We can't do that. If we do that, then we will allow ourselves to become them who don't believe in liberalism, who believe liberalism is a weakness, not a strength. It is our strength. It is the strength of America. It is the strength of our Constitution. I believe the founding fathers had no idea what they tapped into when they tapped into liberalism. And I'm glad it's metastasized to where it has, that we've advanced in this country to have the 19th Amendment, to give women their rights, to give black people, brown people their rights. I think we should give LGBTQ people every single privilege and right that is granted to people who look like me. And we should not stop until we reach that moment. And even when we reach that moment, we should see if we can get a little better. And no one's going to be 100% happy 100% of the time. It's not going to happen. That's not how democracies work. Hell, that's not how life works in general. I mean, you know, life sucks and then you die. That's the phrase. But it doesn't have to suck. It doesn't have to suck. We have so many great things in this country and so many great people. And if you just open your ears and listen to the experiences of people, no matter where they come from, no matter what religion, no matter what creed, no matter if they were born here or they came here, no matter if they're what their status is here, whether they're a dreamer or a refugee or a migrant that come across the border that doesn't have legal status. They're here. They're humans. And you can learn from them and they can learn from you. And we can build a country. That's the melting pot. You know, that was a melting pot. Remember that? Remember when that was one of the things that we held high on the shining city on the hill was the melting pot? And they look at it today and they mock it. Patriotism is a weird thing. It really is. And there's kind of a gray area in patriotism. A really gray area in patriotism where it bleeds and it becomes nationalism. And when you bastardize a religion and use the religion to delude people into coming to worship a country that doesn't quite exist anymore, they want it to, but it doesn't. It really does. It really does take hold and become a disease. And Trump is a symptom of that disease, as they described to you today. I think that's the reason why they probably wrote the book. It's not really about Trump. It's about how Trump stumbled into power. And how Trump stumbled into power because a certain voting bloc saw him as their revenge or their retribution. And it's the reason why he can continue to say crazy, dumb shit. Just some of the dumbest stuff. And do some of the dumbest stunts. I mean, like this one here. Here is him outside. Oh, wait a second. This is him outside the courtroom yesterday. With his stack of inkjet printed Google Chrome articles. This is wild. Oh, my God. Oh, fuck. You don't get more boomer than this. I hate to tell all the boomers in the audience here because we do have some boomers in the audience. This is boomer as fuck. Okay. Boomer AF this is. But let's watch Grandpa complain about how he needs a Snuggie.
It's a shame. And I'm sitting here for days now, from morning till night, in that freezing room, freezing. Everybody was freezing in there. And all for this, and this is your result. Look at that, each one of them is snoring. And it's very unfair, very bad thing. Very bad thing. The whole world is watching this hoax.
Did you catch anything that he said besides, it's cold? It's freezing in there. It's freezing. Arr, I need thermal diapers to keep my buns warm. Fuck him. I think they should. I think they should get refrigerator units and hook it up in the room. Fuck yeah. Make that like the polar ice caps. Fuck him. And maybe he does need a pardon blanket. Maybe he does need a fucking pardon blanket.
You can go to imcapesanchez.com and you can get you a pardon blanket there and send it to New York to the courtroom for them all to have pardon blankets. I'm freezing my ass off. Boo fucking who? Now, I'm not opposed to putting Trump on ice. And what I mean by that is not actually in a cold room. I mean, I'm not opposed to that either. But he is on ice. I mean, totally on ice. That is the reason why the Republicans are able to do what they're able to do. They voted yesterday 9-3 in the Rules Committee to advance forward the Ukraine package. And it's leaving Republicans all kinds of room to operate in Washington. And the reason why is because literally Donald Trump cannot be on his cell phone. He cannot be on his cell phone. I guess the other day the judge told him to get the fuck off his cell phone, or his attorneys told him to get the fuck off his cell phone because they caught him on his phone or some shit. He wants to so bad be creating chaos through his cell phone. Rather, he's posting on Truth Social, rather he's texting other seditious pieces of shit, or he's calling members of Congress to make them create chaos in the House of Representatives. He can't communicate that very well. And he can't communicate with his campaign in the same result, in the same moment. And it's hours and hours and hours. And the other thing that really makes me satisfied, makes me so happy, that this motherfucker can't go golf. I don't know why. I don't know why I feel so just smiley about that son of a bitch can't golf, but I bet it just gets underneath his fucking skin that he can't go golf, and that makes me happy. But the other thing that makes me happy is people are really starting to realize, as Trump's on ice in the courtroom, how ineffective Trumpism is. It's very ineffective. It sucks to suck without Trump, right? The chaos machine really does look kind of clunky without the chaos king. Because he's really the one at the helm of all the chaos. Because he only survives if he creates enough chaos. Even Dan Crenshaw, the pirate from Texas, understands this. Listen to what he has to say. He's not talking about Democrats here. He's talking about his colleagues in his caucus. Listen.
I guess their reasoning is they want Russia to win so badly that they want to oust the speaker over it. I mean, it's a strange position to take. I think they want to be in the minority too. I think that's an obvious reality. I'm still trying to process all the bullshit. So.
I'm just trying to process all the bullshit. They are going to be in the minority. There is nothing more that is going to put them in the minority than to keep propping up Trump and Putin. This country hates this motherfucker. They hate that motherfucker. Let me show you how the bodega situation actually started the other day in New York City. You know, he set up a stage visit to the bodega. We covered it here as he arrived at the bodega, and there was, oh, look, there's all kinds of people. Oh, man, they love him. We love Trump. We love Trump. Well, this was just a few blocks away from the bodega. See if you can spot all the Trump supporters in this video here.
Whoa, fuck you. Fuck you!
God damn. So that's actually how the bodega went down. they didn't like Trump. The people who were cheering for Trump, it was staged. Uh-huh. It's all fraud. Who would have thought that the fentanyl fuhrer, the fraud himself, would commit fraud on his supporters? Well, he did. And he's going to continue to do this type of stuff. I mean, this type of stuff is not going to stop. And really, if we wrap our heads around that Trump's going to do what Trump's going to do, And this trial is going to be what it's going to be. Now, I actually think that the worst possible scenario, and the reason, and I know a lot of people disagree with me. A lot of people disagree with me. I think this is the weakest case against Trump. Now, a lot of people say, it's all about the documents, which I believe it is about the documented evidence of his fraud. But the documented evidence of his fraud has nothing to do with the specific election. I know he did it during the specific election. But look, if I'm a lawyer and I'm not one, and even if I was one, I might not be the smartest one in the world, even if I did have my law license. But I'm smart enough to know how to defend something, you know, or put together an argument to defend something. And if I had to defend, if I had to play devil's advocate and I had to defend Trump in this trial, and this is where my thinking goes about the election interference is a moonshot here. We see so many times, like in the Kyle Rittenhouse case, they overcharge and try to overconvict and they don't get a conviction. It's so easy to bang up a judge and a jury when the charges are overextended. And it's going to be really, really a tough case to prove. I mean, if I'm a Trump lawyer, my defense in the trial is going to be, this is an election interference. This is Trump behavior. This is Trump behavior. He did it legal for so many years. Look at all the legal hush money payment. Look at all the NDAs that Trump has done. Look at all the legal ways that Trump has been able to keep people quiet. And not just for an election, for his reputation. I believe that's a case that they might make. I don't know if they will or not. I have no idea. That's my fear, though, if you can call it fear. Is that I think that, yes, they are going to make a strong case of why it's not election interference. And there's a possibility that there will be some doubt in these jurors' minds. Because there is plenty of doubt in these jurors' minds. I don't know if you've seen this. But even these jurors doubt that they could even be impartial. It's fucking crazy stuff. And people like Charlie Kirk and some of the right wingers out there are saying some crazy shit about the jurors, that they're cat ladies and stuff. But these jurors that are walking away saying, I can't be impartial here. I can't be impartial. I'll convict him no matter what they say. My view is that is a good part of our system. That's something that we should see. I don't know. Maybe I couldn't be an impartial juror. Could you? I ate that motherfucker's guts. And not because of him, but because of what he's fucking done to our country and what he's allowed our country to devolve to. Fuck, without Trump, I wouldn't even fucking exist on this show. And I'm not saying that's good or bad, but by God, it would be a much better situation if I didn't have to sit here and yell and scream about white Christian nationalism. If I didn't have to yell and scream and advocate for fucking the LGBTQ community's rights, black people, brown people's rights, women's fucking rights to healthcare. It would be a much better situation in this country if I didn't have to sit here 2 hours a day yelling and screaming to defend that shit. So what he's done to our fucking country is the thing that pisses me off the most. And is the thing that makes most people impartial, I believe, to his bullshit. Because as you've seen in the clip of the actual footage of people from New York, the organic people from New York and how they fucking appreciate or don't appreciate Trump, they don't like that motherfucker. They do not like that motherfucker. This country does not appreciate Trump at all. Only in small parts of the country where his representation is larger in those small parts. But here's Charlie Kirk trying to tell all of us, and I don't know why these incels hate pussy so much. You're going to know why he said that. But they do. These incel type guys, they hate pussy. They hate pussy cats.
This right here, it's 115. Yes, I'm going to play in a second. I get attacked sometimes for saying that single cat women are, they have bad politics.
Single cat women. I don't know what the fuck he even means by this. I guess he means that single women are the only people that own cats. I'm not really sure about this, right? I mean, I'll be honest. I'm not really a cat person myself. I'm more of a dog type person, if I had to choose, right? And my dog's not actually in here today, which is surprising. He's usually sitting on a chair right here next to me, farting most of the time. If you ever see me make a face, oh, it's because I'm playing a nasty video of Trump's neck pussy, or my dog is farting next to me. Or maybe I farted. Hell, I don't know. There's sometimes I just make sure it's not caught on a hot mic. You know what I mean? Try to make it quiet. You know, then I mute my mic during a video to let one loose. So if you ever see steam coming up, that's probably what it is. Anywho, back to what I was talking about. Why does Charlie Kirk think single women love cats? I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of single women who don't like cats. But what has this guy got against pussy? You know what I mean? Why? What has he got against pussy? He doesn't like women and he doesn't like cats. I'm not sure what this guy's thing against pussy is. But OK, go ahead.
People say, how dare you say that? This woman is a perfect example.
Oh, yeah.
Of perfect. Single cat woman politics. Perfect. Cut 115.
Can you share your opinion of the former president and why you felt that you could be unbiased?
So, again, he is covering this as if this woman, this single cat lady, her and her two pussies. He's acting like she is a juror. She recused herself. It's one thing Charlie misses in this cat lady. Really, honestly, if it was the kind of cat lady politics that he claims that there is, then why wouldn't this lady make sure to sit on the jury? I mean, if there's some kind of grand conspiracy to get Democrats to convict Trump and put him in jail in New York City, why in the fuck would this woman not get off the jury? Why would she at her own will say, no, I can't be impartial? But he misses that part. He totally misses that part, even though he played it in the clip. But let's listen.
I'm not a fan. During COVID-19, I lived.
Do you get a sense that she has so many fucking words she wants to say here, but she knows the microphone's in her face and it's going to be like played on the news? So I feel like she's holding back so much fuck-em attitude. You know what I mean? I think she wants to let loose on this motherfucker like you wouldn't believe. And she's really being gentle and nice. It might be because she has a fucking cat. It might be because she's a single cat lady. Charlie is why she's being so fucking nice to him. Okay? Maybe consider that.
With someone who is immunocompromised, and I think his handling of COVID-19 was abysmal. I have a sister who's adopted from China, and the comments he made about China when he was running for president made her very anxious and therefore made me angry. There are policies he has supported that regard women and reproductive health that I do not agree with.
And so scaremonger here. Is it scare or scoremonger? Right? I need some fucking scoremonger here on Twitch says, I'm not a fan. Heard a little phrase, I'm not a fan. It means I fucking hate that piece of shit. That's exactly what I envisioned, right? If she really wanted to say or really said what she wanted to say, that's how she would say it. I hate that fucking piece of shit. It's probably as she says it with her friends and would probably say it to this fucking idiot right here. Look at this guy. This is their idea of supremacy. Look at these motherfuckers. Oh, my God.
Oh, she keeps on going from there. Seems unbiased, Blake. Just perfect. By the way,
she seems unbiased. Listen, she's telling you, you fucking asshat, that she can't serve on the jury because she can't be a juror because she won't be impartial. She will convict that motherfucker no matter what. because she hates his fucking guts. And it ain't because it's unwarranted. She gave plenty of reasons without curse words in it, which I actually commend her for. I cannot believe that she did that interview without throwing in a few fucks here and fuck him and piece of shit and asshole in there somewhere. You know what I mean? Racist, bigot, adjudicated rapist. He's taking away women's rights, that motherfucker. Like that sort of thing. You know, I would expect her to pepper in those certain words. So she's being nice. But not only is she being nice, she's being honest. And really, honestly, Charlie Kirk should say here, I am so glad that this woman didn't seat herself on the jury. Good God. Can you imagine? I'm so happy to see that Trump's going to get an actual jury that may be impartial. This is what they should be saying in reality, but they're not. They're not, because the Trump trial reality hasn't really hit them yet. It hasn't. The Trump trial reality hasn't hit them yet. It's starting to cascade out. Because as they watch Mike Johnson and as they watch the House Republicans that are, looks like they're 100% going to get this Ukraine package done. It really is. It really is not setting in on the trial yet. But there is something that is setting in Arizona. Now, if you know anything about Charles and Charlie Kirk, he's lives in Arizona. That's where this big studio is that they have, where these fucking bigoted white Christian nationalists sit every day and make jokes about women. Oh, yeah, women and their pussies. Ah, we hate pussies. We hate pussy. That's what the show should be called. It's called Thought Crime. Is this show here is called Thought Crime. Here, let me show you. Here, you can see down here at the bottom, right here, Thought Crime with Charlie and Jack, right? But it should be called We Hate Pussies. Because it's just a panel of guys that do everything and say anything they can not to get fucked by a woman. I mean, it may work for each other. I don't know. Maybe they have a circle jerk after the show. But this is a total circle jerk. But the reality is setting in on the 1864 shit that we were talking about earlier with Tom and Paul. It is setting in. Listen to Charlie here in these incels talk about the 1864 and the turning back of women's rights and their rights to not be criminalized because of pregnancy. Listen.
Are we going to lose any of the pro-life votes?
We could. But, I mean, the question is, how big a number, and are they really going to go? What are they going to do? Vote for Kennedy? Go third party? I mean,
that's what's so insane about all.
They're scared. They're scared. They see the writing on the wall. They know this is happening. They know that there's a headwind here. They know that there's a coalition of people out there, even people who used to be pro-life, specifically pro-life women, have changed their stance because they thought it would end at Roe. And it didn't. It didn't. And the idea that Charlie would put in his mind that these people, these pro-life people, because this is a real thing that they're concerned about, that actual pro-life people, this has gone a step too far to go back to 1864. That would vote for Robert Kennedy Jr.? I don't know, but Robert Kennedy Jr.'s brother has something to say about it. And maybe it'll help. I don't know. Here, let's take a listen.
Yeah, I know. We cannot do anything that in any way strips even one vote from President Biden.
All right. This is his brother. This is John Kennedy II, I believe is his name. I think that's his name. I don't know. It's his fucking brother. It's RFK Jr.'s brother, one of the Kennedys, right? Now, just this little clip right here, all right, just this little clip right here will get Trump supporters to go vote for RFK Jr. Just that one little clip. One little clip. This clip is not designed, right, to make sure that Biden voters don't go vote for RFK Jr. This is to get disgruntled people who are sick and tired of Trump who would normally vote for Trump or normally vote for a Republican, kind of like a Bill Barr type, give them permission to go vote for RFK Jr. That's what this clip is designed to do. Because when you hear someone say this,
yeah, I know. We cannot do anything that in any way strips even one vote from President Biden.
Yeah. Now what I'm going to, you know what I'm going to do? I don't want to vote for Trump. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go vote for RFK Jr. because fuck Biden. The people who hate fucking RFK or who hate Biden are not going to vote for Biden. Okay. Are you going to vote for Trump? Would there be anything I could say to you that would get you to go vote for Trump? Anything. I mean, can you think of something that I could say that would get you to go vote for Trump? Not a fucking thing. No. Hails to the no. There wouldn't be. I could sit here and try to convince you all day long from now until November, and there ain't no way you would go vote for that motherfucker. Even if I made a really good argument, which there isn't one. One of the reasons why you wouldn't do it. But if you believe that someone even as disgruntled as a Trump supporter would be, who fucking hates Joe Biden, because they are out there, folks. There are disgruntled Trump voters that fucking hate Joe Biden. And you know what we need them to do? We need them to hear this clip from Bobby's brother, if they're in a state where Bobby will vote or will be on the ballot. Because I would much rather that disgruntled Trump voter, take up protest and go vote for this guy's brother in their state in the general election. Bobby Kennedy is not going to steal away votes. Is not going to steal away votes. Yes, it's Joseph II. Excuse me. Did I say John? I meant Joe. Joseph. It is Joseph. Sorry about that, grumpy cat. You are correct. Speaking of pussy, we like pussy here. We like having grumpy pussy in our grumpy pussy cat. Don't get all bent out of shape. All right. Let's listen to what Joseph number two has to say about Bobby Jr.
And a guy, you put the name Kennedy on the ballot and Democrats are going to feel torn. And
okay, that's all bullshit. That's all bullshit. That's all bullshit. Listen, the last significant member of the Kennedy family that held a significant seat and did anything significant in this country was Ted Kennedy. And the last significant thing that Ted Kennedy did in politics in this country was support Barack Obama's 2008 campaign. It's one of the last things he did significantly for the Democratic Party. I mean, we're talking about 2008. Okay. You know how many years in politics? That's like two centuries in politics. That was pre Great Recession. That was pre pandemic. That was pre Osama bin Laden being assassinated by us, getting unalived by us and taking him out. That was all pre that. That's how long ago that was. So to think that Democrats somehow are tied, you know, with some sort of sentimental value to the Kennedy family is fucking bonkers. I think the Kennedy family wants to believe that shit. I think the Democratic establishment wants to believe that shit, but it ain't true. It ain't true. I think sentiment for certain families and politicians went away a long time ago when Barack Obama beat Hillary Clinton in 2008 in the primary. I really do. I think that started to break the cycle of hierarchies of families controlling the Democratic Party for good, bad, or worse. But this idea that somehow Democrats are somehow enamored by the name Kennedy is modern Democrats in 2024 or somehow sentimental about the fucking name? About the name Kennedy? Give me a fucking break. I don't believe it, but let's listen here.
We are trying to make them understand that this is an issue that they do not have to feel torn about, that the entire Kennedy family, every single one of us in every family, have all supported President Biden. I've never heard of that before in my family.
Would you encourage your brother to drop out?
Of course.
Yeah.
Sure.
I mean, he hates his brother as much as we do. You can sense it, can't you? Oh, my God. Oh, my God. We're out of time. It's at the end of the week. I'm so glad you stuck around today. I'm so glad we played the whole show through YouTube. It's been a while since we played an entire episode on YouTube. And I want to thank you guys for sticking around and being on YouTube for the interview with Tom and Paul, the authors of White Rage. And I want to invite you tonight personally to the Library of Democracy's Fuck 'em Fam Book Club. And you guys are going to, they're going to discuss Tom and Paul's book, White Rule Rage, tonight in the book club, 6 o'clock Eastern. Let me show you how to get there real quick before we go. We're over time, but I think it's worth it. I want to show you how to get there. All right. You go to thetonymichaels.com. This is the most important part. This website right here at the top, thetonymichaels.com. It's up here all the time, thetonymichaels.com. Just go to that website right there. Click it. You'll see subscribe at the top of the page. Do that for me. You'll always find the latest episode and where you can watch the full episode right here at the thumbnail. His struggle. Oh, he's cold. But here's how you get into the book club. You go under memberships here. Under memberships, you'll see the Patreon link, which you can join the Patreon as a free member or a paid member. But what we're promoting right now is the Discord server and the book club. These two links right here. Go download the Discord server, our Discord app on your phone. Excuse me. Download that Discord app on your phone. Just go to the App Store, search Discord. You'll find it. It's an icon that looks like this. I think it's purple and white. Ours is our colors here at the Tony Michaels Podcast. And just go into the Discord server. You can click the book club or the Discord server link here. Make sure to go to the Welcome Center and click the green check mark. That'll open up, verify you as a human being. We don't let any frozen embryos in our Discord server. They don't have to be humans. You got to be a human to get into our Discord server. So verify in the Welcome Center and it will open up the book club for you. You will see the conversations. People start to pour in right before and right at 6 p.m. Eastern. That's 6 p.m. Eastern tonight at the book club. And they will be discussing the book that I interviewed the authors today, Tom Swaller and Paul Waldman's White Rule Rage. And do another favor while you're at it. Just click this link here. Link your Amazon Prime account to your Twitch account and give us the credit. We get one free subscription with the Amazon Prime account. And on your way out of thetonymichaels.com, click the store link. You know we broadcast from the Antifa corporate headquarters here in Commie Falls, Missouri. Yes, we do. I want to show you one of the fucking fam's newest t-shirt designs that they are loving. It's flying off the shelves. It's democracy is a joint effort. I think this is a great message as we get ready to go to the polls in November and we get ready to fire up everyone to engage in their democracy, to go vote, 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 and make sure we protect people's rights and vote for people's rights and vote in politicians that will set policies that defend people's rights, because democracy is a joint effort. No pun intended there. Maybe there is. Check out all the stuff in the Commie Falls gift shop there. All your highbrow merch, as it was. Don't get too high this weekend. I'm not going to. I appreciate you sticking around, and I'm glad we stayed on YouTube today. Everyone, have a great weekend. Same time, same place on Monday, I promise. And we're going to have a Sunday rant. So get over to Patreon. Join Patreon. Join the $5 tier, and you'll be able to see the Sunday rant this weekend. Until Monday, same time, same place. Surf's up, motherfuckers.
You've been listening to the Tony Michaels Podcast. In your face commentary of current events and political news. No rules, no boundaries. I think we've made that perfectly clear. We hope you enjoyed the show and we'll be back soon. In the meantime, follow Tony on social media at the Tony Michaels. And until next time, raise a fist and repeat after me. Fuck 'em.
Murphy's Meal Barn, head ass speaking.
Camera.
Guys, there's a fire.
Oh, my God.
All right, there's a fire that has started, as you can see live. We wonder if a person is on fire. In the fire. We apologize for showing this. Get a fire extinguisher. Do we have a fire extinguisher in the truck? Do we have a fire extinguisher in the truck? Connor, bring a fire extinguisher out. Anyone have a fire extinguisher? We deeply apologize for what has happened. This man.
What do you say? We also are seeing an active shooter is in the park outside the court. We have a man. He has set fire to himself. A man has emblazoned himself outside of the courthouse just now. Our cameras are turning right now. A man has now lit himself on fire outside of the courthouse in Manhattan, where we are waiting his history to be made. A full jury panel is gone. We are watching a man who is fully emblazoned in the front of the courthouse today. We are watching multiple fires breaking out around his body and person. We have seen an arm that has been visible that has been engulfed in total flames. There is chaos that is happening. People are wondering right now if people are in danger. I'm looking across the courtyard. There is a man racing to his aid. There is coats coming off to try to put out the fire. We have members of security details. NYPD is rushing to the scene. They are trying to come out. Officers are on the scene. A fire extinguisher is right now present being put on this man to try to put out. People are climbing over barricades to try to separate the public to put out the flame on this man. He has lit himself out in fire in front of the courthouse right now. We are watching as they're playing. We can smell the air. I can smell the burning of some sort of a flesh. I can smell the burning of some sort of agent being used as well as an accelerant to put that fire. I smell an actual fire extinguisher having been displayed. I see a person whose body appears to be on the ground being surrounded by officers. I have multiple officers. I count about a dozen officers on the scene. Burning. The fire is still burning. It's now in multiple locations. It continues to blaze. We right now have officers removing their coats, trying to surround this person to envelop their body to prevent them from further going into flames. You can smell, I'm sitting here with Evan Perez, you can smell burning flesh, you can smell an accelerant. The flames are continuing to engulf his person. I hear shouts that are coming from across the courtyard. I have people, multiple people running over, another fire extinguisher being brought out. This person's body continues to be engulfed in flames. A portion of his body is still engulfed in flames. A yellow smoke is billowing from on top of his person as it is engulfing the officers who are continuing to try to put out these flames that are continuing to emblazon. Now the officers are not visible through the...
Yeah.